This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's the Lombardi Line on a Friday. The show, as always, presented by DraftKings. As we welcome in our VSiN and DraftKings Network audience, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. It's a Mike Palm Friday in studio in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. And my boy is excited but anxious about the Iowa Hawkeye women coming up tonight, the most anticipated Final Four for the women's side. I know that I can remember. We got a couple of really fun games tonight.
Yeah. Remember the year Baylor had a shot to go 40-0. I think that was a very highly anticipated one. And then they beat Notre Dame in the final. But the women's game is on such a platform right now due to the star power of especially Caitlin. But I mean, Juju Watkins at USC, Paige has sort of emerged here. And South Carolina just reloads with Dawn Staley. So it is highly anticipated. The men's ratings will be better, obviously, than the women's, but there won't be as much of a gap as there's been in many, many, many years. I'm interested to see if tonight's second game, Iowa and UConn, can draw 10 million. I know you don't think it can eclipse. And a Sunday final of Iowa, South Carolina, when they set that in a kind of a standalone window on a Sunday, you'd be very awesome. You know, the women over the years has moved that Sunday game around. They played it at noon Pacific time last year, LSU and Iowa. For many years, I know it was a 4 o'clock Pacific time start. But they get the game on ABC, obviously, and that draws a lot of eyes to people that, you know, don't have that package with ESPN.
the ratings are still going to be awesome. I just personally don't feel like it'll be the same or better than it was against LSU Iowa because, just of, like you said, the star power specifically that was in those two games with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, two faces of the women's game.
I got to tell you, you know, Flo J. Johnson, however you want to
say.
I say Flo J. because Flo Jo or Flo Nays, but she's very good.
Oh, yeah, she's awesome.
She will be a star.
If she was defending Caitlin Clark in that game, it might have been a different game.
Now, here's the thing. If you're going to put Beckers or Johnson, you know, that takes away from their offensive end and their legs tremendously. And I think Kim wanted to keep her fresh because she had a big role in the championship game. Obviously, Iowa packed that zone in, but, Van Lith and wherever she's going to go now in the portal.
The hands up in the air. That's the meme and gif that's gone around the world. But to me, like, they kept talking about in the broadcast, because I've watched LSU basketball in the postseason, but I'm not watching every day throughout the course of the regular season, but that she primarily is that lead defender. Like, she takes the toughest defensive assignment every game. And then the biggest game of your entire season with all of the eyeballs in the country watching you, you don't have her do that. And you have Haley Van Lith, who just could do nothing. Like, that's why she put her arms in the air. You're doing screens behind her. Like, it just going behind the screens, rather. I just didn't understand a lot of their approach to her. And, you know, Gino Auriemma is not going to come at it from the same angle.
No, I think he's going to switch all the screens. And that's what you have to do, or you can't go under, for God's sakes. It'll be interesting, though. And it'll be interesting how they're going to defend UConn. They've got, you know, you want to stay in that zone. The risk is, and everybody who's coached basketball knows this, it's hard to block out of a zone defensive rebound. And they got killed on the glass. I mean, Angel had 20. Talk about, you know, she didn't have a great second half. She had 20 rebounds, and that was their offense, the putbacks. So,
yeah, the second chance. She had the size advantage down there, too.
Big. It's an interesting point about her going to the WNBA, and a lot of her dominance is size related, right? Because she's just taller than all these other girls. But when she gets to the WNBA, that's taken away. I think she's got a great competitive fire, though, obviously. And, you know, she told Kim she wanted the ball, to get her the ball more, and not so many words. I think Iowa will change defenses a lot tonight. I don't think they'll sit in that zone. I think they're going to throw a lot of junk at UConn, try to change the looks. You know, Lisa Bluter's been there a long time, too. She was successful at Drake. She's taken now, even before Caitlin, she did take a team to the Elite Eight. So they'll throw a lot of different looks. I think Iowa has the big advantage this year of been there. Like, last year was their first time. Lisa Bluter said, you don't understand until you get to a Final Four all the extra things that come with it, and the open practices and all the separate media that you have to do. And this time it's much more businesslike because there's nothing new for us. We now know the drill. And we can focus more on our game plan.
They know the drill. And because of the way that, like, Caitlin Clark has blown up, I mean, the home games even that you guys have are just jam-packed to the gills. Everything about this girl is surrounded by media. Everything about this team this year has been surrounded by media. So it's very commonplace for them, it feels like, this year. They're laying 3, total 162.5. Like, I haven't bet this game, but I might lay the 2.5 that you guys have here. I just feel like it's going to be a close back and forth game, but I was going to do enough to come out on top.
Did you bet the game maybe Monday
it's
night?
Maybe it's a logo 3 from our girl at the end.
Well, what was it? 26 feet, 8 inches was her average. Her average. She doesn't need a proper 3-point line when she plays.
I bet the over in that game. I didn't pick a side.
Okay.
But I know you also said you lean NC State against South Carolina taking the points.
Well, I would much rather bet the first game and take the points with NC State than try to pick that. I've seen spots where it's gotten up to plus 135 on the UConn women's money line. I might do that as well.
As your emotional hedge?
Well, yes. And hope that Caitlin wins the, I guess I could take 3 and try to hit it both ways. Iowa to win by 1, 2, or 3, right? I guess I could do that as well. I just think if UConn is either going to win this, I don't think the point spread's going to come into effect. Let's put it that way. Even if it's 3.
Point spread doesn't matter. The winner is going to happen one way or the other. In terms of your emotional hedge, could I throw this one step deeper in terms of the exact results? And I know this has already been bet down a lot at Circa, but South Carolina to defeat Iowa in the women's championship game. Have you looked at any of those look-aheads you have?
What about Iowa to defeat South Carolina in the women's championship
game? Iowa to defeat South Carolina is...
And you get 6-1? 5-1?
Plus 450.
Okay. And it's now down to what? 110? Plus 110 and 115?
For the other way?
South Carolina to defeat Iowa.
South Carolina to defeat Iowa is plus 135.
Plus 135. How about,
so you'd almost rather just bet UConn because it's near the same thing.
How about UConn to defeat Purdue and South Carolina to defeat Iowa? Put those two together. Minus 115 and plus 135. You got a 6-game parlay there, right? It's a 6-team
result. Is that what you want to do?
Well, that's all favorite, right? And you'd get what? Close to 3-1.
Okay.
Oh, no, more than 3-1 because you're plus... Let's see. And you're getting them 135, and it's only 115, not 110. So maybe like plus 320 on that. I don't know. I think I would probably in that title game take the points with Iowa if it becomes South Carolina against Iowa. I think, you know, they played them very well. They blocked out against them very well last year. I actually think the South Carolina team last year is better than this version. Remember, nobody challenged them. They were like UConn.
Well, I mean, same thing.
UConn men.
It's interesting. Same point this season that they were last year, undefeated, headed into the Final Four.
And almost the same spread against NC State. They were 12.5 against Iowa last year, laying 11.5 against NC State. I think the South Carolina team's more vulnerable than last year.
Well, and what I'll say is, in terms of a championship, if we do have the favorites both win out here in the Final Four and go to the national championship, Iowa has that in their back pocket that they can say, we've done this before. Like, we've beat South Carolina.
They haven't beaten UConn. They don't have that in their pocket tonight, Stormy. UConn.
They have not beat UConn. The first game was in 2020, freshman season. UConn blew them out. And then the most recent matchup, you were telling
last year. At the Phil Knight in Portland, which was a terrific tournament, by the way, both on the men's and women's side last year that they did. I believe it was like 85-79, 6 or 7 points UConn won by. And I believe Caitlin had 25, 6, and 7. In that game, I throw the first game out as a comparison. I mean, she was a freshman and they were totally, totally outmanned in that regional game.
Okay. Men's side, last couple minutes, just quick thoughts on where you sit right now, since we're not going to hear from you again until the game's on Saturday.
I think NC State is very intriguing.
So you like NC State men and women's side.
I couldn't believe what they did to Marquette. I mean, I'm just watching this stuff. Duke was just hanging in there with him, up five. All of a sudden, Duke's down 12. I mean, that's, of course, their fourth meeting. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. I bet them against Carolina in the ACC championship game. I said they're playing so well. Carolina doesn't really need this game. They basically wire-to-wire over Carolina there after having lost to them twice. It played outstanding in the tournament. The only game that they really showed a little bit of wear was against Oakland when Oakland took them to overtime in the second round, but they've just been outstanding in these games.
Well, and that was also the only game that they were favored. That's true.
They're a big dog in every other game.
Every other game, they've been a huge underdog that they've won outright by an average margin of like 10.5 points per game.
The second halves are amazing, and take out that Oakland game, right?
Take that out of the stats. Heavy
was the head that wore the crown.
What's been crazy to me is see the stats uptick for DJ Burns, who's been like everybody's favorite basketball player throughout the tournament. But he, during the regular season, those first 31 games that they played of the year, he was very average, and he has been incredible throughout this tournament.
We talk about Caitlin. How about him as a passer? I mean, he's like magic out there. I mean, he's really good, and I like the other kid down low is great on the boards, and their guards have played well. And this was a below average team, and they're just running through everybody in the NCAA tournament. This is a more unbelievable run if they won it than what they did with Valvano in 83.
Which, by the way, if anybody was wondering, because there's been a lot of talk in NFL circles, GMs and scouts hitting up Jim Nagy, talking to Peter Schrager about their interest in DJ Burns, he has come out and said, zero interest. You know, it's not happening. He definitely has the mass and the feet. Kevin Keats, his head coach, said no way he's going to play football. He's got a great touch, but he's not the bully you guys think.
Speaking of football and basketball players, on Gil's podcast, we had Jeff Schwartz is usually a guest once a year. I asked him who was the hardest person to pass block, and he snap called Julius Peppers.
Ooh, I believe it.
Yeah. He
is a big dude. We're going to hit the break here real quickly. We're going to talk a little NHL coming up next with Nick Alberga. But I kind of want to ask him, like, don't we all just want to see what Zach Edey or DJ Burns would look like on skates? Like, now that's my curiosity. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like the Lombardi Line, you're going to love the GM Shuffle. Michael Lombardi, our own former NFL executive, gives his unfiltered opinion. And yes, that means he uses some choice words that he cannot use on this program on players, teams, and coaching decisions every Monday and Thursday throughout the year. He and Femi Abebefe holding it down. Download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle Pod from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcasts. We're rolling along here live from Circa Resort and Casino. Mike Palm and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And now joining us via the Progressive guest line, the one and only Nick Alberga, who it has been too long, my friend. You can catch Leafs Morning Take as well as co-host of the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. Follow him on X at the Golden Muzzy. Alberga, things are getting crazy right now, especially in the wild card. How we doing?
I'm doing really, really well. It's like the 1 year anniversary, I think, of when I came on this show and said Vegas wasn't doing anything substantial in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that really worked out in my favor, guys.
Those were good times, weren't they, Mike?
Yeah, I agreed with him, though. So I'm not going to bury you for that. Nick, tell us really, though. I mean, in Toronto and really in Canada, the whole of Canada, is anybody going to be watching hockey tomorrow, or will all eyes be focused on Glendale, Arizona, and favorite son Zach Edey trying to take Purdue to a national title game?
Yeah, I'm sorry to break this to you. I'm gonna be watching WrestleMania. This is my weekend to shine as a wrestling fan, so I'll be watching that. But I think there will be some people who are watching him and what he's been doing. Obviously, it's different, the coverage in Canada, but there are big time NCAA fans. Like, I know a lot of them, especially football. But it's not as it is in the States. So I think, unfortunately, a lot of people will stick to hockey tomorrow.
Is it a missed opportunity for Zach Edey not to try to be the next Zdeno Chara? Like, I think that would have been amazing to see. I want to see that man on skates.
Oh, that'd be so cool. I know they've tried a couple different like crosses with the NFL and the NBA and stuff. I think that would be so cool. And I actually saw a video. It's funny you bring him up, because even just patrolling social media the last couple of days, there was video of a young Zach Edey playing hockey, which is kind of cool, right? I think everybody who grows up in this market starts as a hockey player and then branches out.
I think his second career will be as a Bond villain. He's like a cross between Jaws and Oddjob. I mean, that's where I think he'll be cast. All right, make me some money here, Nick. Who are going to be the two wild cards in the East?
Oh, man, like it's so funny because like it changes on a daily basis, and it really is sad. Like, does anybody want this playoff spot? Like, now I guess all of a sudden the Pittsburgh Penguins are alive, a big victory against the Washington Capitals last night. I should start by saying, like, you can never naysay Sidney Crosby or go against Sidney Crosby. Having said that, I think Pittsburgh has too many teams to jump. Like, that's the problem in a 3-point league like the NHL is right now, is like, yeah, you're seemingly close to a wild card spot, but the teams you have to jump in front of you, it doesn't look good in their favor. I like games in hand this time of year. I know I said that yesterday in a couple different hits, and then Washington goes out and loses, but I still think they control their own destiny here because of the games in hand. So I like the Capitals to get in, and I like the New York Islanders to get in. But I wouldn't sleep on Detroit. I know we've talked about the Wings quite a bit, and they got a big game tonight against the New York Rangers coming up. I wouldn't sleep on them either. I just think this whole story about Pittsburgh getting in, I'm just not there yet, guys.
They've piqued people's interest because they've won 5 of the last 6, and obviously a big win to your point yesterday, 4-1 against the Caps. But it's so crazy looking at the standings right now and seeing Pittsburgh, Washington, the Islanders, Red Wings, and Flyers all with 81, 82, or 83 points right now. Meanwhile, you look on the Western Conference side of things, and is that all but sealed up now with LA's win over San Jose yesterday and their lead right now being a 7-point advantage on St. Louis with 6 to go?
Yeah, pretty much. And then the Blues, a tough loss to the Nashville Predators, right, where they pulled their goalie with like 12 minutes remaining. And sometimes you have to pull out all the stops to try to win this time of year. I think it's done. It's been done for a while. Even when Vegas was in a precarious or seemingly precarious position a couple of weeks back, and then they rang off a couple wins in a row, I just really didn't fear for that team. They're obviously going to get in. They're spoken for. It's more so in the Eastern Conference. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of like going back and forth. Like, Philadelphia, I think, is in trouble just because of the games left. They only have 6. Everybody else has 7 or 8 remaining. And the whole John Tortorella thing, too. Like, he's just wearing out his welcome again in a different market. Like, this has happened a billion times in his coaching career. So I wonder about Philadelphia. Lost some players at the deadline, lost their number one goaltender. But every time I wonder about Philly, they prove me wrong. But it's just more so like, who is going to step up and grab this wild card is my question.
Nick, you know, speaking of pulling the goalie, now Hines has done it twice in overtime. And I've been critical of it. And people say, well, you don't understand hockey. Well, here's what I understand. If you do it at the end of regulation, at least you deny the other team, the point that you're chasing. I don't understand it in overtime where you're going to lose the point if it doesn't work.
It's hilarious because I think 99% of people who cover hockey had no clue this was a rule. I will say it's hilarious because last night I was on the over 5.5 and 6.5 with Nashville and St. Louis. So I was like, yeah, just pull them with 30 minutes left. Like, keep scoring goals. So like, it was a breeze for me. But yeah, like I watch hockey day in, day out, you know, 24/7, 365. I had no inkling of that rule. And it's news to me, and maybe it's something they solidify or figure out in you know, meetings after the season and into the off season, because yeah, it really is weird. It makes absolutely no sense. Like, what's stopping me from pulling my goalie in the first period or anything, right?
Talking NHL with Leafs Morning Take host on the Nation Network, Nick Alberga. You can also check out the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Looking to tonight, Nick, what do we like? 6-game slate coming up this evening. Favorite bet of the day.
Okay, so I'll preface by saying this time of year, I'm not a big fan of betting in the NHL. Just weird stuff happens. Just go look at the slate this week. I actually bet 6 times and I went 4-2, but lucky me. I just think it's so unpredictable. Having said that, there is one game I have my eye on, and it's the battle for the Hart Trophy, the battle for the Art Ross. It's Colorado and Edmonton. So I'm gonna play the Edmonton Oilers here, the back end of a back-to-back here for Colorado. The Oilers are coming off a 5-0 spanking by Dallas the other night. Connor McDavid has 1 point in the last 2 games. So I'm going to play McDavid over 1.5, and I like the Oilers to win outright against the Colorado Avalanche. Big matchup, a behemoth matchup in the Western Conference tonight.
Nick, right now, I think the Stars are playing as well as anybody. How far does that translate into the playoffs?
It should. You know, it's fascinating to me, and it's hard to call a team that's won 8 games in a row and is in the conversation for the President's Trophy a sleeper. But I mean, at different books, you see different prices. Before it came on, I saw +900 for the Stars to win the Cup. I mean, the route's going to be difficult. I think we should start there. That Central is so strong. I mean, you even look at a Winnipeg Jets team that's been a surprise this season. I mentioned Colorado. Like, it's going to be difficult for every team, but never mind a team out of the Central, but I really, really like Dallas. I think first and foremost, I think if they can get a couple more saves from Ottinger in between the pipes, like I think he's been just okay by his standards this season. And still, look at where they're at in the standings. I think they did a good job solidifying their blue line. Chris Tanev at the deadline, I think was a very, very underrated pickup. They added a kid by the name of Logan Stankoven coming from the American Hockey League, the highly touted prospect. He's been seamless in his addition. And then you got some vets up front. Jamie Benn's having a great year. Matt Duchene comes by way of Nashville via buyout. You got Robertson. Like, there's so many guns on that roster. And for some reason, nobody really talks about them. But I think it's a perfect position for a team like the Dallas Stars. So, yeah, they're certainly on my list of teams in terms of futures here.
And playing so well right now, you want to be peaking at the right time. So this is a good spot to be on the streak that they are. Also coming up tonight, you played the total in this Golden Knights Coyotes game. What are you looking at there? And also, what do you think of the Coyotes soon to be new home in the future?
No comment on the Coyotes. I expect mayhem. I'm not kidding. I am just so tired of the Arizona conversation. I think 2 days from now, they're going to be like, April Fools, we don't have a building again. But anyways, we'll let it play out. I like the over. I'm looking at Hurdle's return tonight, too. I think I've watched Arizona quite a bit lately. They're scoring goals left and right. Vegas is getting ready for the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I'm drawn in on that one. I'm looking at that. I might take a peek at Detroit on the money line against the New York Rangers as a home dog in that game, too. Like, there's some fascination there. But again, I had to preface. And when producer Steph booked me, I said, hey, I got to preface. I hate betting hockey this time of year, so I'm staying away. I'd love quickly just to add some futures that I think bring some appeal. Yeah. Everybody's looking for the next Vegas guys. A couple teams I would throw at you. At Nashville, plus 3,000, 15-3-2 in the last 20. Never sleep on a team with a bona fide number one goalie and Saros and Roman Josi's having an unbelievable season on the back end. Don't sleep on them. Tampa 10-1-1 in the last 12, plus 2,500. They went to three consecutive cups a couple of years ago. A modern day dynasty in the NHL world. I think you could be able to find a lot of value this year in terms of futures for the NHL.
Nick, real quick, 20 seconds. It's been profitable fading the Canes in the playoffs. And you're too many Europeans. They can't win the 7-game series. Has they changed the makeup of their team enough to get to a Stanley Cup final?
I still wonder about the goaltending. I really want to get there with Carolina. I have this conversation on a daily basis. In fact, I had a dinner with one of their broadcasters a couple of weeks ago, and I said, I just have zero faith in Freddie Anderson or Kochetkov. Like, somebody's going to get hurt. Something's going to go wrong. So, sadly, I'm fading Carolina again. Sorry to say.
Nick, you're awesome. Good luck with the bets that you did not want to make tonight. I appreciate you.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time, we are offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. All you need to do is sign up at vsin.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. vsin.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Mike Palm and Stormy Bonantoni with you back here on the Lombardi Line. And I know baseball is one of the sports that you're very passionate about. It was a really fun opening day procession that we had out here at Circa not too long ago. But now some interesting, negative, questionable news coming out of the team that will play in Vegas at some point. Their new home, the Oakland A's, will be playing at Sutter Health Park in Sacramento from 2025 to 27 while a stadium is being built here. What do you think about it?
Well, it's great for the organization that they found a place to play. They had no home for 3 years. And when they had met with Derek and I and they had showed the plans for their stadium here, and he kept asking them, well, what are you going to do? And then, well, we're going to travel, maybe play abroad, maybe. I mean, nothing made sense. That you maybe do some series in Vegas. I think they could reconstruct a stadium in Summerlin and add seats and get it. This is what, 14,000, the field in Sacramento? It's, you know, you could get that very easily up with left field to 14, you know, even maybe 20.
What is the capacity for the Aviators right now? What is that at Vegas ballpark? Do you know?
I think they're close to 11. Okay. And they average 10. I mean, but you could blow out left field. I think there's room there to add more capacity in left field, maybe get it certainly to 14. Anyhow, I think it's good news there. I also think that it's interesting that market to cultivate, if you want to try to cultivate customers for businesses that are in Las Vegas, perhaps who will be loyal to that team. Now, so the first thing I did was try to read articles about what's the fan makeup in Sacramento. Because like where I'm from, Dubuque, Iowa, was 3 hours from Chicago, but you couldn't find a White Sox fan. It's like 90% Cubs, 8% Cardinals, okay. 2% Brewers, you know, whatever, small percent Twins. So the most articles I read said it's 65 to 70% Giants fans and around 20 to 25% A's, which is still pretty significant. So interesting because to advertise in that market and, you know, 3 hours from Reno, where we have Legends Bay at Reno as well. So I think it's good news overall that they found a home and it's not that far from their base. Let's see if this project gets going here. They're really going to play their first game in 2028. I think there's still a lot out there that may not be set in stone.
I haven't talked to you about your general feel for the A's coming here.
My general feel is that I love Derek Stevens' idea of Vegas being a spot that hosted different series every year, but not had a franchise, which he pitched to Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, who was going to take it to Manfred because he liked the idea of Cubs Cardinals play one weekend and Yankees, you know, because people want to come here, right? And,
sure.
You know, make it a trip. People come here, you know, we get a lot of Colorado people, a lot of visiting fans.
I guess I just was, I wish it wasn't the A's. I guess that's my only
thing. Do you want the Dodgers? I mean, what?
Obviously.
Did you grow up a fan of any particular baseball team? Not really.
Not particularly.
No. But it is the A's. So we'll see. It's another transplant team like the Raiders. There's no comps to draw when you start a franchise in a city like they did with the Knights. I mean,
there will be no replication of what that was. No. And all the situations surrounding that season, it's the connection to the team and to the city is just different than any other team or league that'll come here. But there's higher expectations now, I feel like, in general, for other franchises to come because of how successful they were right away. You have the Aces that are back-to-back world champs.
I think there's still a shot that an NBA team that's a Las Vegas team tips off before we get baseball from the A's here.
You think
here.
So?
I think we'll have a team by the end of the decade, and do the A's play in 28 or not? I think, who knows with Caitlin Clark coming into the league and Angel Reese, and maybe the Aces have to play in a bigger arena too. I mean, we'll see. They get close to sellouts there. I mean, they're averaging 9,000 at a capacity, you know, somewhere there at Michelob. I think you can get that to 12, but...
What were you telling me about the Indiana tickets for the Fever next year?
Ludicrous. It's the fourth game of the year. Courtside seats are $2,500 apiece. There's like six left. And then I looked to like 8 to 10 rows up towards center court. Some were $1,300, some are apiece. I mean, like, my expectation would be you could go to a WNBA game for $30, right?
Sure.
Even the upper bowl I saw, $280 for that game against Indiana.
The Caitlin Clark effect is... for real. Before we get too far off of baseball, though, any action today? I know that you're always watching every day.
I was going to bet this Detroit game under. I'm glad I didn't. They had some runs here against the A's. I did bet. You see this news that Yuri Perez is out for the Marlins. They're basically their number two pitcher is going to be out for the season. I did bet yesterday at 18-1 Marlins to have the worst record in baseball. So a little future bet there. I'm still trying to figure out some more Cy Young, because I also have Lizardo on that same team as my only Cy Young bet. But they came out the gates losing their first seven.
What futures did you end up locking in before the season?
I did. I bet Cubs over 84 was the only one. I didn't end up pulling the trigger on the Padres or the Diamondbacks. Those were the other two I was looking at.
It's crazy looking at the division, the Dodgers. They're like already a minus 650 favorite for the division, even though the Diamondbacks went to the World Series last year.
They've gone over their team total all nine games, the Dodgers.
Well, yeah, they and the Giants are just like overs every single game so far. I wanted to ask you about this college football Super League as well, while we're talking some of these big picture topics. Andrew Marchand and my friend Stuart Mandel, who, by the way, you helped out March Madness weekend, getting up to Stadium Swim of The Athletic, two really great college football writers. But they put out this report about this group of college presidents, ADs, Brian Rolapp, who's basically Roger Goodell's number two at the NFL, as an overseer advisor of what they're calling College Sports Tomorrow is the name of the group, and a super league in college football that will essentially blow up college football as we know it right now. No more conferences. The idea is 80 teams, 70 that would be fixed teams, 10 that would be subject to relegation or promotion, similar to what we see in European soccer, from the remaining pool of 60 or so Division I schools. And then with that, the postseason format would be, it's a 16-team playoff like you have in the NFL right now, where you break up those 80 teams into eight divisions, 10 teams each, division winners, wild cards that are exclusively based on record. So you're not going to have, how we talk about like blowing up conferences, there's not going to be a CFP selection committee, there's not going to be a BCS computer ranking systems, it's all based on record and tiebreakers. Any just immediate thoughts on that scenario?
Have they determined the 70 teams?
It would be from the
Power Four.
So the way that they termed it, I have to pull the article back up. I just texted out of it. But it was like the Power Five, whatever that fifth conference would be.
Mountain West, is that going to be the fifth conference?
I don't know what I need to go back and read the article.
The two Pac-12 schools are going to play there.
But
right?
Essentially what the fixed would be is those 70 primary conference teams. And then the 10 are those lower levels that would be relegated or promoted.
Why not those 70 get to be relegated if they're that bad? Because of the budgets of those schools and how it would change?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, this is all based on finances. It's all based on television ratings.
So the other 10 would come from what we call the group of five, right?
Essentially.
And then it would just be group of fives that go up and down.
Group of five and, like, yes, just Notre Dame is a part of the 70.
That's
yes,
great.
Your independence great. Still works great. Out for you there. The quote that I really took out of this, though, that I did have written down was that it would create one entity to negotiate with a prospective union that would represent the players on NIL, transfer portal, and salary structure rules. And that's the thing, right? Like, that I do really like about the idea. And I'm sure this is like the first of many different models and ideas that are going to come up. But if, and I think it should, college football separates from the NCAA, have its own governing body, figure out the way you want to do it. You do need to have some sort of a structure to pay players that makes sense, and for transfer portal not to be just you can pick up and leave anytime, any place that you want. Maybe it's contractual like you have in the NFL. So I think there's a lot of layers to it that are interesting to talk about.
All right. What are the downsides, Stormy?
I mean, there's a lot of downsides.
Well, what comes to you that you like conferences?
I love conferences. Mm-hmm. I love the history of the SEC. I was devastated that the Pac-12 went away after a century. Like there's things that those of us as long-standing college football fans love about the history and tradition of the game that would be going away.
I wonder how many of the natural rivalries, I know they said, 8-10 team divisions that they could maintain through those divisions, because you'd seek to do that, because financially you'd want to maintain those rivalries for attendance, obviously, and for storylines and television viewing. So I do love the idea of relegation and promotion. I think it's an outstanding idea that somehow we have to incorporate into American sports.
Yeah. The television side of it, I also think is interesting because these conferences are tied into TV deals forever. There was a rush that was put on the CFP to have their deal extended and locked in with the ESPN for however much money that is. And so a lot of layers to it. Nothing's happening tomorrow, but I like that a conversation is getting started, because I do think at some point college football should and will separate itself. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line, wrapping things up today.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college hoops bet. Download the app and use the promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. No better time with the women's Final Four upon us today. Men's Final Four coming up tomorrow. Before we get to Does Palm Have a Qualm? The much awaited every week, obviously, on a Friday, our favorite segment. Final thoughts for our audience for you tonight, women's Final Four.
I'm going to take NC State in the points against South Carolina, and I haven't made up my mind yet on the Iowa UConn.
Just watch. Just watch.
Maybe you if I win the first bet, I'll do a little UConn money line. I want to say this because we talked about minus 115 exact result on the men's side.
Mm-hmm. You did the math?
I did the math, and I'm going to try to – I'm going to assume, and I could be off 5 cents here, but at 5.5, UConn will be a minus 235 favorite money line. So they're 750. Purdue's 440 over NC State, and minus 235 is minus 101. So that's a better price. So if you bet 115 and with those three bets, you'd get back 228. Obviously, if you bet 115 at 115, you're getting back 215. So there's a better price to not play the minus 115 on a single bet.
So it's attractive when you just look at it at first blush, but there's an alternate way to get in there. I like that. Leave it to you to do the math.
Well, we have time to do the math. So
long commercial break. There you go. Yeah, for me tonight with the women, I'm not 100% sold on how I want to play it. I like your approach with taking the points with NC State. I think that's a reasonable bet for the men and women for both of these games, whether it's NC State against Purdue or against South Carolina. It's just such a big number right now. And granted, the Gamecocks have blown out just about every team throughout the tournament with the exception of Indiana, but they've had moments throughout, whether it be that game against Indiana or moments in the regular season where, like I said earlier, they've played with their food a little bit. And this NC State team has played really, really well this season. So I don't hate it. I think I'm going to bet Iowa. And maybe I'm just like...
Money line or are you going to lay the points?
I'd be more comfortable money line. Okay. Just play it safe from and it's still not that safe. But I think it's going to be a really good back and forth game. If I were to bet it, I would bet it here because you're getting the best number, 2.5. But we're seeing 3, 3.5 out there. I probably think that that'll be at 3.5 by the time we get to tip off at some of those spots. We'll see. Let's get to, does Palm have a qualm? So I'm going to throw a couple of these higher priced props in terms of like longer odds, longer shots like we do on a Why Not Wednesday and see if Mr. Palm has a problem with it or not. And we'll start in the men's college basketball tournament. The star of NC State, DJ Burns, any interest in a 20-1 price on him for most outstanding player in the tournament? If NC State can get themselves into the national title game, could he be the guy?
Here's where the math is actually, it's interesting that I think if you take them to win both games, it's going to be better than Burns at 20-1 because you're going to get 3-1 and six, like 6-1. So you're going to get better than 20-1. I'd rather just roll over two money line bets on NC State. Obviously, they'd have to win it for him to win MVP. So I think those odds are too short.
We talk about how remarkable NC State has been on this like stretch of 9 straight elimination games that they've won, winning as an underdog over and over and over again. Could they be on upset watch against Purdue? Could they do it again?
Sure. How can you say? I mean, what they did to Marquette, what they did to Duke in the second half.
I just wonder because Edie's a different animal. That's the big question I have. Especially with getting to the foul line, like we talked about earlier.
You keep the two big guys on the floor. That's your problem here, which means it's going to be a lot of dump downs where they're going to have to, you know, try to force him a little bit away from the basket. But they can't. Here's the hard part. On the offensive end of the floor, too, you can't try to fly over him for rebounds and because you've just got to keep those two guys live. So we'll see. But, I mean, I was blown away by what they did to Marquette. I mean, Marquette was playing very well.
Duke.
Duke got the injury to Houston was key in that game. I'm not saying they had no shot to win the game, but I mean, it was a 1-point game and that hurt them. So, and they had beaten Duke in the ACC semifinal already. So
I feel like I already know your answer to this next one, but I'm going to ask it anyway. The Fighting Rod Brind'Amours. Still live mathematically to win the President's Trophy, 50-1. Could they overtake the Rangers in this spot or Stars?
No, I think the Muzzy is right. Nick Alberga, who we had on earlier in the hour. Freddie Anderson, not terrific in goal, gave up 3 in the first period to Boston last night. For me, if I'm betting the Canes, I'd rather have Pacheco, but they're getting Anderson back into that number one role. I'll pass on that. I think the Stars are worth a little bit of a look here. Just 1 point behind the Rangers for the President's Trophy.
You get that plus 140-ish, or plus 190, price there. And they're only a point behind the Rangers, to your point. In baseball, Marlins to make the playoff.
Ludicrous.
You don't even care about the number. It's no missing, number. It doesn't matter.
I just bet them 18-1 to have the worst record. That's missing a zero. They're the first team ever to make the postseason and open 0-7. By the way, the next year. No, six. I don't even know it's missing. It might be missing two zeros.
That's bad. Well, what's your feeling on the Angels then? Could you buy in on them to win the AL West? 25-1, it's a good number.
I'm with Frenier. He hit a home run and lose 11-2.
They're better then.
Stop. Let's move on. 25-1, way too short.
You don't like any of these baseball ones we put in here. I mean, this Tiger Woods one is kind of a joke, but Tiger to win the Masters, you know people are going to bet it. 130-1.
Is that to make the cut or is that to win the Masters?
What is the price to make the cut? Do they have that up?
I don't think we posted it yet, but that will take a lot more action than him to win.
For sure.
Because people will also bet no, thinking that maybe he's playing well, but he just can't walk 18 holes 2 days in a row, right? I mean, that's
which is a reasonable expectation.
But why a lot of people are tuning in to watch that too. I mean, he brings all the eyeballs. So no, that's missing a couple zeros.
So there's been a lot of talk with Joel Embiid coming back to the 76ers that they could be the Celtics' biggest competition in the East all of a sudden. We've seen the odds just in the past couple days go from 13-1 to 10-1 to win the Eastern Conference. Would Palm have a qualm with the team from Philly?
Not as much as a qualm as all these other ones. I mean, I keep looking for a team to beat the Celtics, right? That's the angle. Well, they'll beat themselves, but who's going to pick up the pieces because they're going to be playing them? The thing about the Sixers, they get this low seed because he was out. I don't have a qualm with this bet. I'd like to get 15-1, but I don't think it's the worst bet in the world. Somebody's going to do it. It isn't the Knicks. I still can't wrap my head around the Bucks. I just don't think they play enough defense. Maybe it's Miami. They did it as an 8 seed last year, but okay. We'll say yes to something.
Michael is such a pessimist about his team and no belief.
Philadelphia.
For him, I said, I already know that you're not going to take them to win the Eastern Conference. I know, but could you take a plus 650 for them to miss the playoffs? Because they're in that 8th spot in the play-in right now. He said, oh my gosh, let me run to the counter. That's the way that he would play it. But the East is so weird because the West, you've got actually like a competitive group there, but the Celtics, it just seems like it's a runaway for them. Do you think it's a collision course for the Celtics and the Nuggets in the finals?
Yes, I like Denver to win it all. I think they're so balanced. I think Jokic creates such an element to the game. I like their rotation. I like their depth. And I think the other teams at the top of the West haven't had the playoff experience to close out.
The Celtics, meanwhile, in terms of those let's look at the total championship out there. The Celtics are the favorite to win it all, plus 185. The Nuggets not far behind, plus 340, followed by the Clippers at 7-1. I think they're dead, and I don't trust the Bucks either at plus 750. And I love the Clippers. I want them to have success. I just don't see it happening. Let's stick in the Western Conference, though. Warriors to miss the playoffs, minus 205. Would you have a qualm laying the 205?
Well, Stormy, I would have to do a little bit of look at the schedule here to give you a reasonable opinion on that. Minus 205 too, huh?
For the playoffs, not the play-in.
I know,
obviously.
To get into the eight.
Correct.
To get into the eight. Golden State. Well, they get the Lakers and then they get, I don't think that's that bad of a price. No qualm there. That's a lot to ask of them. They have to win two games.
What about the Lakers at minus 120?
Well, they are to make the playoffs. This was a bigger number here like last week, wasn't it? They were a pretty heavy favorite to make the playoff. I guess it's all about you get the 8 or the 9 with the Kings. Somehow the NBA will get the Lakers into the playoffs. So
Warriors and Lakers are getting in. Yeah. That's the way we're putting it out there. Which, I mean, I could see it. Don't get me wrong. I think that's all we have for does Palm have a qualm. So you mostly
Wait a minute. I don't want it. You said you like the Defenders -5 this week. You said
I do.
You think they're gonna cover.
I do.
You gave a hot tip.
I think that they're gonna have a bounce back from their opening weekend loss. Like I said earlier in the show, they were moving the ball well, but they had to settle for four field goals. So if they turn those field goals into touchdowns, I think they're going to have a much better day. And the Roughnecks are not good. They only had 12 points week one. They're a completely different team than they were a year ago. I think week one, they certainly were the worst team. How long that'll carry over, I don't know. But early season, DC bouncing back at home. The Beer Snake's going to be in full force at Audi Field. I'm about it. And my game, by the way, make
Battle
sure
Hawks.
You tune in. Saturday night. If you get, you know, if for whatever reason Purdue's a runaway against NC State, you're bored, you want to flip the channel to ABC, we'll be on over there. The Brahma, the Renegades and Battlehawks. Tune in. Have a great day. Enjoy the women's Final Four, and good luck to you, Mike, with Iowa.